Hi, I'm Reverend Zach.
I'm Francis.
You sound so cranky.
I had to watch this movie.
And welcome to This Movie Was a Hot Dog, a podcast where me and my brother, Francis over here, watch a bad movie, critically, financially, or otherwise. Then we review it, break it down, and tell you what we think. And this week, we watched 1996's The Phantom. Hold on, my notes aren't coming up because as soon as we started recording, that's when my computer decided to not work.
Oh.
But come on, seriously? There we go. Yeah, there it is, 1996. Okay, it's a superhero movie directed by Simon Windsor.
One of my favorites.
There you go. starring Billy Zane, Treat Williams, Christy Swanson, Catherine Zeta-Jones, James Remar, and Patrick McCune. We were just talking about this, and I don't know why in the late 90s this was a type of movie we needed to make.
And out of all of it, only one of them did I like.
Well, yeah, because between 93 and 99, you got four of them. You got The Phantom, you got The Rocketeer, you got The Shadow, and you got Dick Tracy. All of these really, really old comic strips that were made in the 90s and set in the 30s, we did it four times, and not one of them ever did well.
Did you like any of them?
No!
Really?
I mean, The Rocketeer is good.
You really think... I didn't like The Rocketeer.
I thought The Rock... Which one did you like?
I like
if you see The Shadow...
I like Dick Tracy.
Oh, God. Dick Tracy's so dumb.
Why?
It's like watching a living cartoon, and that doesn't transfer well when you're using real people. Al Pacino with a big puppet face on, and they call him Puppet Face or whatever? Like, that's not...
It was one of the last movies filmed using only still motion.
I don't understand why the public wasn't asking for these. Why did we make them? Why did we make four of them? Why did we make the fourth one after the first three bombs?
I've got an idea on that. Maybe they're easy to make. You know, it doesn't require, I don't know, although I'm looking at the budget for this and maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, they're not easy to make, though. I mean, they're action movies. Maybe. They're superhero movies. You have explosions. You have some special effects and stunts. Those aren't easy. You do those if you think this is going to be big. None of them ever did well. I mean, I think The Rocketeer is the best out of all four of them, and even that one's not that great.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. I probably haven't seen that since the 90s.
Well, we should probably talk about the movie we actually did watch, The Phantom, which was a comic strip first published in 1936. I don't even understand these type of comics. Like
It's four panels.
It's four panels once a week. What does it take 3 years to wrap up a story arc?
Yeah, it's like, hello, I'll see you next time.
I remember reading the Phantom comic strip when I was growing up. It's still going. It was one of those things where I just like read cartoons, like whatever they were, it didn't matter. Because by the time you read one, you like, oh, I don't fucking remember what happened last week. That was 7 days ago.
Unless you're like keeping them.
Right, you cut them all out, and I'm sure there are people who do
I would not doubt it. I definitely.
I bet when, you know, before there was like TV and radio, and it was in the 30s, and The Phantom was, you know, just came out, I bet that was a legitimate thing to do, so you'd be like, oh yeah, what happened last week?
And you got your little, you know, people make photo albums, though they have their Phantom album with all the
right. Their
comic strips in a row, right. Like, ooh, do you have number 7? I do, actually. That was in a rare paper. It only, you know.
That was in a rare paper. They only made 3 of those papers that
but
night.
I have the strip from it.
That was in a rare paper.
another one I'm missing. Strip number 1,274.
At Phantom Con?
Phantom Con. But you know what? We're laughing about it, but you know there's someone out there that has a binder or an album.
Of course there is.
Oh.
So anyway, the movie. All
right, we got to get to it.
I know. It's so, like, that. There's a reason we're not talking about it. This movie is so boring.
And there is just no plot, really. There is a plot, but it's just Yeah, it just kind of trudges along.
I saw this in the theaters when I was a kid, and I even remember it being bad then, because it cost $45 million to make, and it made $17.
Ouch.
It didn't do very well, and I remember knowing that even at the time. And today, when I sat down to watch it, I'm like, I don't know, maybe it was just one of those things where people were just giving it a hard time. And I watched it, and I'm like, no wonder it did bad. Nothing happens. It's so empty.
You know, I went into it with a complete open mind. I didn't know any. I mean, I knew it was a comic strip, but I didn't know anything about his origin or, you know, his powers, which apparently are nothing. And
except maybe he's magic.
Maybe. I don't know. No,
maybe.
I don't think so. But
well, we'll get into that. So it opens up with a prologue that says, "For those who came in late."
Ooh, catch us up.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that.
Why was that there?
Maybe that's a thing from the 30s? I don't.
It says, "For those who came in late," and then it goes, "Long time ago, there was a boy on a ship, and then pirates attacked it. And then he swam to Africa, where an African tribe raised him and said, 'You're a superhero now.' That's the story of the Phantom." And we're like, whoa, all right, we're just breezing past that, huh?
For those who came, it's almost like in a comic, sometimes they'll have a panel that says, like, in case you missed the last five issues.
But these are on three-panel comic strips on the Sunday Times.
I know, but I'm just that's what I take out of it.
Well, I watched this first scene really brought some issues that I have with, like, current superhero movies, and I couldn't tell them, like, is this good or bad? The same in the sense that every time they make a Batman movie, mm-hmm. we have a 15-minute scene where we see Batman's parents get killed.
Yeah.
Like, at this point, we don't need that.
Everyone
right?
knows. I mean, if you're really going to see a Batman movie and you don't know that, then why are you seeing a Batman movie?
Right. Everyone knows. And we've made, like, six Batman movies in the past 10 years. Like, everyone's got it. We're all aware, right? But at the same time, like, this movie did that, where it's like, you know, you don't really need to know what's going on. Just know that there's a superhero. Like, I hated that they did that, because I'm like, wait, who's what
except,
now?
Except that we actually needed to know.
Yeah, we did need to know, and they didn't tell us. They're just like, everybody reads The Phantom, right?
Yeah, wow, what a social outcast you are. You don't know anything about this.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Did they not describe it because they thought everybody knew it, or did they not describe it because they wanted it to be sort of, we wanted to have the mystery as we watched it, something?
Well, they spent $45 million. Maybe they didn't have any money left to describe who he was.
I don't know where that money went. There's like $45 million? There's no special effects in this movie. There's no, like, huge names. There's no big set piece. I mean, I guess there's a couple of big set pieces, but, like, not to justify $45 million.
Maybe it went to the actors. I don't know.
Who? Treat Williams? You can get Treat Williams for a free lunch and a handshake.
Billy Zane? I don't know. All right. So, anyway, all right, we're actually going to do the movie now.
Yeah, we're actually talking about the movie now. So it opens. So after we get that prologue with the pirates and whatever, James Remar, who is like third build in this movie, I never like that used to be a thing where James Remar was in a top cast of a movie. He's driving a truck in Africa with a tiny African boy, and this scene is so long and you don't even know what they're doing. They drive across this old rickety bridge and they get to a cave, right? And they're like, great, we found this old mystic artifact, which is this, like, silver skull. They pick it up, then a skeleton comes to life and strangles one of James Remar's goons. This is the first instance of, is there magic in this or not?
Yeah, and then it's never explained, and
they never, because there's a bunch of points like this where it's like, at first I was like, oh, that's a booby trap or something.
Yeah.
But it's not.
How's it going to choke him? I mean,
a skeleton comes to life and chokes a guy to death. And they're literally like, well, that was weird. Let's just leave. We got the thing we're looking for. So they're like, great, we got the skull. So they walk outside, and then in a completely different set, for no reason, Billy Zane is sitting in a chair and just sort of goes, I sense evil afoot.
Is he magic?
And then, is he magic? And then he gets on a horse and just walks into frame.
Now this kills me.
This is the opening to presumably what we're hoping is a franchise, right? I mean, you don't make a superhero movie without at least some kind of hope that we're going to make a second.
No, the whole superhero and most movies now are all built around sequels.
Right, but even they were back then. I mean, Batman was, too. And so was Superman.
Yep.
Superman was the first one. I mean, you always make one assuming you're at least going to make a second one. Because superhero movies themselves are anthology stories. They're built to keep telling a story.
They have many villains. You know, you can't have all the villains in one movie, so...
And, like, personal facets and different areas you can go with them. So, obviously, they were... Even if nobody explicitly said that, somebody was hoping we would make a Phantom 2. So, if you're going to make... There's no pomp and circumstance to him showing up. He just walks on a frame. There's not like, I gotta get suited up and here's the, I'm a secret, like, and there's no like, what was that? I heard a thing over there. He just is like, hi, I'm Billy Zane. It's bright daylight. It's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm in a bright purple jumpsuit, so you can't miss me.
I'm riding a white horse, and I have a wolf.
And they're not even like when Batman shows up, and Tim Burton's Batman, there's like, he goes, I am Batman. He walks up, he jumps on a truck, so the bad guys get in their truck, and they drive away, because they don't even know whether or not they should be afraid of him, they just assume they are. Like, he doesn't even do any superhero things. He gets shot at, stabbed, punched in the face, and essentially loses the first fight.
He's pretty disappointing, almost like Captain America in one of our previous episodes.
Right. Immediately. Right out the gate, this guy is just like, he gets punched, stabbed, and shot.
I'm wondering, I'm like, he has a gun. Why doesn't he really use it?
He has two guns. He has two guns that he never uses. He shoots them at the end, and I think it's one of those like things where it's like he shoots a rope and then a chandelier falls on a guy's head.
Yeah, you don't actually shoot people.
No, it's the 90s. Well, also, this truck fight is stolen right out of Indiana Jones.
Oh, and so is the... Let's go into the scary skull cave.
Oh, well, yeah, the scary skull...
With a trap. With traps. Or whatever.
But, I mean, this fight is almost shot... Like, it's... You know, he's hanging on the front, then he's underneath the truck, then he's hanging on the door, and we're punching guys on the door. I mean, it's Indiana... We're in the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Indiana Jones fight verbatim. So, you know, James Remar bails on this truck. This truck falls off a bridge. Billy Zane gets out. We cut to Billy Zane's weird jungle mansion where his manservant is healing his wounds while he reads giant ancient books. And he finds out that it's three magic skulls. One's made of gold, one's made of silver, one's made of jade. And if you get all three of them together, they're magic and they unleash a magic power, right?
Yep, that's what I got out of it.
Right, so then Billy Zane's ghost dad shows up.
I like these scenes because he talks to himself.
Well, I mean, first of all, ghost dad's played by Patrick McCoon, the guy who played the warden in Escape from Alcatraz. He's the king in Braveheart, and he's the doctor in Scanners. He's a pretty good actor. This is one of his last movies. I think he died like 2 years later.
Yeah.
So this guy is dead, and it's his ghost. But is he really talking to a ghost, or is he crazy?
But, and, because they, hey, for those who watch our Sidekicks episode, this has been a theme.
That wasn't lost on me watching this. I'm like, okay, are we in a Sidekick situation here? Or is the skeleton choked a guy to death 5 minutes ago, so there's magic, right? But,
maybe.
But because, so we got a ghost, we got these magic skulls, and we got the magic skeleton killing people, right? And there's a couple more instances. But no one's ever like, you're working with black magic, or don't do that, the spirits will find out. Or Billy Zane's like, well, I know some good magic. Nobody says anything. Magic just sort of happens around the story without actually having to do with anything.
Illuminati confirmed.
What?
I don't know. I'm just messing around. It's a conspiracy. What?
I'm aware of what it is. I don't know why you said it.
You know, randomness.
Well, it was that for sure. After we have this weird ghost scene, we cut back to New York at a fancy party where Christy Swanson shows up. She's the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yep.
They're at this party, and she's like, I'm an independent woman who also flies planes and goes on adventures. And we're like, okay. Treat Williams shows up, who is playing a cartoon character. He's literally a... mustache-twirling supervillain.
Yep, I don't know, he was my favorite character in the movie.
In this movie, it's like we're creating this like comic booky hyper-reality, but everyone's playing it straight. Like, Buffy the Vampire Slayer is playing this as if she is in the original Die Hard film, and this is very serious. Treat Williams is in, like, a pinstriped suit, and he's got this pencil-thin mustache, and he's walking around going, "Mah, see?"
I'll tie you to the train tracks.
Yeah. Oh, well, you're gonna publish a bad report about me in the newspaper? Well, why don't I just buy your newspaper? That's how he talks.
Yeah, and it's the whole movie. It never lets up.
And he's great in it, but, like, this movie actually also suffers from, like, okay, it's boring, nothing's really happening, nothing's really explained, but also the writing is awful. I mean, the dialogue, people say, is horrendously stilted. It's like they took dialogue from a comic strip in the 30s and they just put it in a movie script. People don't really talk that way.
Right. That's why when you hear people say, like, oh, this is, you hear some people, the comic book, super comic book nerds, a little bit higher than myself, so I'd say, would say, oh, well, there's nothing like the comic book. Well, you know what? Because if you put the comic book directly into film, it would sound stupid. And that's what this film did.
And it does. It sounds really stupid because you can read something and interpret it with all those colors and, like, the bubble art, and it'll make sense in that context, but as soon as a real person is saying it, it's just like, what? Why is he talking that way?
Yeah, I mean, and not with just talking, too. That would be like putting, if you put the real ending to Watchmen in the Watchmen movie, people would not have liked the movie.
Well, people didn't like it anyway.
Really?
A lot of people didn't like Watchmen. I agree with you. I was disappointed because I wanted to see the giant squid alien.
Yeah, but...
But I get it.
Right, you had to. I mean,
well, not only that, like, that would have been an $80 million movie that all of a sudden would have needed $30 million more dollars to make a big alien invasion ending.
Yes.
Like, so anyway.
Yeah, sorry, we're off track again. We're talking about a good movie. Okay.
This party scene is very long and very boring, and Treat Williams is playing, did I say his name, Xander Drax? He's just a rich jerk.
I like the name.
Sure, whatever. Well, I mean, all Treat Williams is doing is just, he's just smarmy. Like, and he has a smarmy name, too. So, like, what I said before, Buffy, the Vampire Slayer's dad, owns the newspaper, and he tells the mayor and the police commissioner that Treat Williams is trying to get magic to rule the world.
Magic again.
But like they're not like, I think he's into drugs, or I think he's into, like, he's like, this man wants to get magic and rule the world.
Okay.
You can't just say that.
Yeah, like,
that's the comic book dialogue.
Especially in the 30s.
Yeah, you just can't be like, well, he wants some magic. She's like, I'm going to go to Africa and figure it out. And they're like, don't do that. You're an old man. Also, you're not the female lead in this movie. Buffy the Vampire Slayer is. So she's like, I'll go. So she goes to Africa. These scenes are so rushed and forced that I honestly don't even care what's happening.
There's a lot missing, you can tell.
Oh, Buffy the Vampire Slayer gets on a plane. Treat Williams, like, I don't even know why this scene's in here. Treat Williams tricks a librarian into looking into a microscope that has knives in it so that when he focuses the microscope, the knives poke his eyeballs out. Why was that even in here?
Well, it was part of the thing of how the newspaper got the story about him looking...
Who even cares?
I cared at the time. I was listening to the story.
I didn't. And you know you didn't. Don't lie to me with your faux shtick. You didn't give a shit.
Oh, lying? Am I going to cut my eyes out with a microscope?
I mean, it's so dumb. And it's like, I get it where...
It's evil.
Yeah, we got to show a thing where the bad guy does a bad thing, right? Okay, I'm with you there. But this is literally, and I mean literally, the only bad thing you see him do.
Rather than talking.
And other than, like, I need to get these skulls so I can keep doing bad things. He blinds this character we don't know about for a reason that isn't even entirely clear. And then that's it. So Buffy's airplane is forced to land in the middle of the ocean, which I don't think you can do with a seaplane, because a group of sexy female pirates led by Catherine Zeta-Jones Force the plane down?
Yeah, and I'm wondering, did they just, like, radio them, like, we'll shoot you down? Why did they land?
In the middle of the ocean, which is also as calm as a lake.
Yeah, and trust me, folks, I've been over the entire ocean. There's no spot, really, in the middle of the ocean that...
You mean you can't land a plane there?
No, you could not. Not in a million years.
So the Phantom, in another scene, is talking to a British colonial captain about the plane thing, because he's in with the locals, the Phantom is.
He's with the jungle police. What do they call them again? I saw, like, some kind of sign.
I think it might have been jungle police. So the sexy female pilots take Buffy the Vampire Slayer to James Remar, because he's on a boat. And, like, at this point, like, I literally have a note in here, why is this movie so boring? There is no mystery here, right? The Phantom has no build-up behind him. We see him in broad daylight all the time. So there's nothing like, there's not even like, ooh, what does he look like, or who is he really? He doesn't do anything beyond talking to people and riding horses at a reasonable speed.
Reasonable.
The bad guy's intentions are all laid out. We know exactly what he wants as soon as we see him.
No twist.
There's no twist to him. And we're just doing a lot of walking around.
I noticed also that, like, so the daytime thing, he's like, I'm going to climb up this rope stealthily. Well, it's daytime. Everyone could probably see you.
Also, you're in a bright purple jumpsuit. You are so easy to see, it seems like a hindrance. Like... You're in the green jungle and you're wearing a bright purple jumpsuit. Like, he doesn't want to hide. But so, like you said, he climbs onto this boat. It's bright daylight. It's not even nighttime, where the scene might just be interesting from just inherently because it's darker. Mm. Nope, it's like 1:30 in the afternoon. He climbs onto this boat, and it's not even like he has to sneak down a passageway and cut a wire and then pick a door lock and get in here. He just walks into the room that Christy Swanson's in, where, what's her name? Catherine Zeta-Jones is guarding her.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine Zeta-Jones does nothing to stop him. She points a gun at his face. He literally just takes the gun from her hand. Like, not even in a fancy karate move. He just goes slap and grabs it out of her hand. And she's like, well, I guess that was all I had, so you can take her.
And then she gets punched by Buffy.
Yeah, Buffy punches her in the face, and then Buffy and the Phantom just walk out of this boat.
No, everyone's like, okay.
Like, but they get out, and the bad guys kidnap them on the top. They're like, see, we knew you were coming. The Phantom's dog named Devil.
Did they actually say that? I didn't even hear it.
What? Oh, yeah, they call him Devil a couple times.
Okay.
It shows up, and... like, he's like, oh no, there's a dog attacking us. So Billy Zane and his new girlfriend get off the boat. So, like, anyway, with the dog getting them, right, he has like a really cartoon fight with these guys, one that only lasts like 25 seconds, where he does like a punch where he'll just like throw his arm behind him because he's that good, he doesn't even have to look. It's better than nothing, but I expect more then this. This movie's been going on for 35 minutes, and he has done nothing.
I was waiting for him to shoot them.
He has two guns! He has two guns on his hips this whole movie! He doesn't shoot a single dude! So they get off the boat, and they hop onto a seaplane. That's the other thing. This movie loves seaplanes.
It's
every
a focal
single
point.
Plane. Every single... They get on, like, what, 12 planes? Every plane is a seaplane. They're not that prominent.
Maybe they were in the 30s. I don't know.
So they hop on this plane and fly away. The bad guys are like, we have to follow this plane on a truck.
And I love how the horse and the dog.
Oh, wait, I was about to
can
say.
Can also just follow them.
Well, no, you're skipping the more ridiculous part of that.
Okay.
The dog gets off the boat because he sees that they got on a plane.
Okay.
So the dog in his head goes, I need to go talk to the horse. So the dog runs over to the horse. Then these two different species of animal have a conversation that conveys that the horse needs to follow the Phantom's airplane. And the horse knows that because the dog told him. Is that magic?
It's gotta be. You gotta have magic going on. Or ridiculousness.
When the dogs started and I don't mean like the dogs like
shake their heads.
They shake their heads and they go bark bark and the horse goes nay nay and they both give a thumbs up and run towards the airplane.
They don't have
that
thumbs.
Part. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, just
that part was so dumb. Like that's another thing. That's the comic book part. Like in the comic book, you can just have that play out because you can have a thought bubble for the dog.
Yes. Yep. You can.
Yas. Yas. You can. You can. Yas. But when the dog just goes bark bark and the horse goes got it, like
another example of it doesn't translate well to screen.
So they're this plane is running out of fuel because I guess they forgot to stop at the Sitco. Oh, that's right. It got shot.
Yeah, there's holes, so the fuel is leaking out of the wings.
So basically what they do is they climb down to the skid of the plane. The plane is landing, and then they jump onto the horse just before it hits a mountain, which I said in about 10 seconds. The scene goes on for like 5 minutes. Like, they get the plane a little lower. Then Buffy the Vampire Slayer climbs down. Then the horse is getting closer, and the bad guys are getting closer. Then he climbs down because he jammed the stick. And then they're almost on the horse, and they jump on the horse, and she gets on the horse. And then just as they get on, the plane crashes. It goes on forever.
And again, almost trying to steal from the Temple of Doom a bit. Yeah, yeah, but it's not like that. It's not exactly like that, but you can tell that's the theme.
It's trying to be a real action movie, but it has all of these weird comic booky things crammed into it, which do not mesh and brings this thing to a screeching halt. So they get on the horse, and as soon as they are, this truck is after them, and there is another chase scene.
Because it was able to catch up to them while they were in a plane.
Right. And they were, like, flying through canyons. I get the horse, but you know what? No, I don't even get the horse. None of it makes sense. And this chase scene is the same chase scene from the beginning. There's nothing new. It's the same bad guy in the same truck chasing the same guy for the same reasons. There's no content here.
Where did the money go? They couldn't afford a different truck? $45 million.
And that's what I'm talking about. What, 80% of this movie is set in the jungle, so you don't got to build a set.
No props, yeah.
There's no props. He's on a horse. Pistols and blanks aren't expensive. Where did those $45 million go?
It's got to be the actors.
I don't know. So, the bad guy's truck gets stalled, so James Remar can't chase him, and they get away. Billy Zane takes Buffy the Vampire Slayer to his incredibly obvious hideout. It's a giant mountain in the shape of a skull, and the skull is white. I don't know how this has remained hidden for hundreds of years. He gives her a pearl necklace from his giant pile of gold coins. Like, he's like, I want to give you a present. It's very important to me.
Why are you
stay
Robin
right
Hood
here
now?
No, it's not. It's not even Robin Hood. Because he's not giving it to anybody. He's keeping all of it. He goes, I want to give you a present. Something to remember me by. It's very special. So wait here. He goes into another room, and it's a room the size of my apartment that is filled with giant gold statues and diamonds and rubies and necklaces and earrings and rings. And he goes into this giant tray filled with thousands of pearl necklaces and picks one up and goes, I'll just lie to her and tell her this is important. Takes it to the other room. She's like, oh, that's so special. And he's like, yes, it's very, very old. This is a line. This guy's trying to get laid. And he's just like, I won't tell her about the room filled with riches I have.
And what was it? It was black pearls, right? Was the gift?
Yeah, it's just pearls, which he has literally thousands of.
Oh, one of my favorite was I think it was back up a little bit, was when she first sees his wolf. Do you remember her line?
No.
She just goes, your dog's a wolf.
Yep, that's about...
It's like,
that's
really?
About the...
Like, that flat? Not like, oh, wow, what a majestic creature.
Well, let's talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer for a second.
Okay.
She is as flat as a door.
Flat as a
like,
door?
She's like, it's... She's not a terrible actress. She's just... In this movie, she's so deadpan. It's like Billy Zane's talking to a wall.
She could care less.
She's got, I don't know, like, she's got nothing to say. And the other thing is, they show her as a strong woman for her time who goes on these adventures, has an Amelia Earhart haircut, can fly a plane, can shoot a gun. But she doesn't do any of that.
She sets, yeah, they try to set her apart just from her look, like you said.
Right.
And everyone else
like,
is in, like, fancy dress clothes, and she's, you know, got, like, the adventuring clothes on all the time.
And she's got pants on. Ooh, a lady wearing pants.
Ooh.
But the thing is, if she's going to do that, then she needs to punch somebody, and she needs to shoot a gun. And every time he comes to rescue her, she's like, well, I don't need your help. I can do this by myself. But then she doesn't, though. Then she gets tied up, and she goes, Billy Zane, save me!
Almost. I'm going to reference another movie here, kind of like Maid Marian in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Like in every movie. And the thing is, though, if you're just going to make a traditional movie where man saves woman, I mean, yes, it's sexist and it's overdone and blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. But it's a movie. If you're going to make that movie, that's fine. Make that movie. But if you're not going to make that movie and you're going to have this character be different and you're going to go out of your way to tell us that she's different, don't then go back on it. If you're going to have her be that character, have her be that character. Don't tell me she's one thing and then she's not.
Yeah.
Because then when she's not that thing, it totally devalues the image she has. Because she's in a leather shirt, and she's got the tight haircut, and she's got the boots on, and she's like, I kick ass and I'm a strong woman. But then when she's whining, it's just like, oh, now you're just annoying. Like, either be strong or be the damsel in distress. Don't be annoying.
I'll take either way.
Something. Yeah. So, in the cave, the British captain from the beginning shows up, and they're like, oh, the bad guy's going to do bad guy things. It's right around the scene where I realize how dumb Billy Zane looks. Like,
he looked dumb from the beginning. Why?
Well, I mean, it's dumb in this scene because Christy Swanson has information for the captain, right? So she goes over and she's talking to the captain. The captain's talking to her. And Billy Zane is just standing in the background of this scene waiting for them to stop talking. And when he just looks like he's waiting for a bus in this fucking costume, he looks like such a turd.
That's so mean.
Like his face, this helmet looks like it's squishing his face.
His lips are pushed again.
His lips, his cheeks are puffed out because this thing is like smushing his face out of it. He looks like he's being pushed out of a sausage press.
Would you stop?
He looks so dumb.
Vince,
so
the plot.
Why? There isn't one.
Oh. Are we going back to New York now?
Yeah, we cut back to an awful matte painting of New York where Treat Williams gets the silver skull from James Remar. This dialogue is like, Treat Williams is just...
What?
Treat Williams is... His dialogue is great. That I will say.
Yeah, it is.
But because he's talking like this and... say, like, because he's doing that, he's really over the top. James Remar is not. James Remar is his goon.
Yeah.
And he's just, I'm a tough guy. I talk with a raspy voice, and how dare you touch my woman, punch you in the face. But his dialogue is the same as Treat Williams. There's one in this scene where James Remar goes, the Phantom is real. I killed him once, but now he's not even dead. Like, I killed him once, but now he's not even dead? What? What does that even mean?
Yeah, because maybe you could say, but apparently, I thought I killed him, but apparently...
I thought I killed him, but you can't kill him. This guy can't die.
Right.
I killed him once, but now he's not even dead. As if there is something more beyond dead that he should be. He should be worse than dead, but now he's not even dead.
Well, the henchman gets killed at this point, I believe.
No, he makes it to the end of the movie.
Oh, I'm thinking of one of his evil business constituents. Some must be ahead.
Oh yeah, that guy who gets a big cartoon spear thrown at him.
Yeah, like an Acme.
Yeah. So Billy Zane shows up and
this is my favorite. He shows up as Kit Walker, his alter ego we didn't even know he had.
Right. That's exactly. This is 45 minutes into the movie, and he's like, by the way, I have a secret identity.
I thought, as far as I knew, he was the Phantom full-time, hanging out with natives in the jungle and bossing his wolf around.
And then, And that's how they show him. He has this cave in his house that he lives full time in. He knows all of the British colonial chiefs. He knows all of these local tribesmen. He does all of this stuff, and suddenly he's like, oh yeah, I'm also a New York City aristocrat?
And then it's like, oh, they went to college together, him and Buffy? They went to college together, even dated? But
when they say they went to college together, I was like, wait, haven't you been the Phantom for like... Wait, weren't you the guy on the pirate ship from the beginning?
And then it's like, oh, so he has the same voice and he just had a Lone Ranger mask on. And you couldn't realize who he was.
This suffers from Superman syndrome where it's like...
The glasses, yeah.
You put the glasses on, you're like, oh, I'm a different guy now. So he shows up.
I mean, I know that the inability to recognize the hero when he's standing right in front of you is common, you know, in superhero stories, but I'm holding it against this movie specifically just out of spite.
And not only out of spite, Billy Zane has a very distinctive voice.
Yeah.
Billy Zane's voice is like, first of all, this guy, like, his voice is like olive oil. It's smooth as shit. He must get laid all the time. And he's 6'5". He's got these huge lips. This guy looks like Billy Zane. Billy Zane looks like the Phantom. Like, they don't... It's not different at all.
He doesn't even change his hair. Well, I guess you can't see his hair on.
You can't see his hair because he's wearing a big swim cap.
Swim cap? Okay, we gotta move on. We gotta go.
So there's this joke where he gets out of a cab and he gives the cabbie African money because... He forgot that you need money in America, so he pays this guy in diamonds. And then we cut to the dumbest scene in the whole movie. We're in a boardroom, right, where Treat Williams reveals his plan, which is the exact same plan we heard an hour ago. There's no new information. He goes, we're going to get these three skulls. These three skulls are magic and blah, blah, blah. But he's got a slideshow PowerPoint. He's got the first
3 seconds. So he's like, we're just going to get the skull.
No, it goes on so long because he goes, we're going to do this. Everybody's like, ah, yes, evil magic. I'm aware of that somehow.
It's all good. Comic
and
book.
Then and then at the end, everyone claps. Like, this guy just gave a presentation on last quarter sales numbers.
Evil plan, yes.
Like, what? We already know this. You told us this already. Why are we doing it again? One guy is like, you know what? I think this magic is a bunch of bullshit, and gets up to leave.
And for his trouble.
And then Treat Williams picks up a giant cartoon spear. Why do they have one in this business meeting?
It's an evil person's place.
And he throws it and impales this guy in the wall, and everyone's like, well, I didn't like him either. And they're like, well, where's the second skull? And he goes, I know where it is. It's at the Museum of Natural History. He goes, okay, shouldn't we set up a heist? And Treat Williams goes, no, the movie needs to end sooner than that. Let's just go right now.
Jump right in. So they go to the Museum of World History? Quote unquote.
Yeah, Billy Zane and Buffy the Vampire Slayer meet because he goes to the newspaper to find out about Treat Williams, and that's where they are talking about the skull. And they also find out that it's at the Museum of Natural History. And of course, Buffy the Vampire Slayer doesn't recognize him, even though he's clearly the Phantom. And I don't even know why we're pretending he's not. So, and of course, this is where you said where they're like, "Oh, back in college," and we're like, "Wait, what?"
They find the skull, the fan or Kit or whatever you want to call him now, the Phantom. They find the skull at this museum.
At the same time that Treat Williams gets there. They get there at the same time.
So not only, they take it from him, basically.
Billy Zane just breaks the glass on the display and takes it. Treat Williams' gang shows up with guns, and they all point their guns at him and like, I'm taking that from you. And then there's another magic part. The two skulls connect together, and they make the lighting in the room change.
Oh,
just like
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
From what?
Where they show on the map where the third piece is or whatever.
Yeah, I guess a little bit. Yeah, kind of.
That's what
these two these two skulls smash together, and Treat Williams is like, he's screaming while the wind is howling around him and glass is breaking, and he, like, his dialogue is so, he goes, this is happening right here and now, This is magnificent.
Yeah,
he doesn't even,
we know.
He doesn't even know what's going on, though.
This is happening. Good. Yes.
What is happening? This is happening right here and now. What is?
Oh, boy.
Then the skulls make little cartoon laser beams point to an island on a map of the world, and it's like, that's where the third skull is. So...
Hold on. I have to say.
Yeah.
So... Not only did the Phantom, we know we talk about how the Phantom kind of just loses at everything in this movie.
Yeah.
Fail to prevent the theft of the one skull he was in charge of, now he has also lost a second skull that he took on pro bono.
Well, did you not think, because this is what I thought, so when the laser is pointing there and everybody's like, oh, look at the laser beams pointing at the map, and Billy Zane looks at the map, then he looks over at Kirstie Swanson, and you're like, oh, this is where he punches a guy and they run out. Right?
No, they just get captured, right?
But you know what I mean, though, where it's like,
yeah.
That's like, this is where that would happen. Everybody's distracted. He looked at the girl. We made eyes. Okay, this is where we make our break for it. No, they just let themselves get captured and let themselves get taken to a car. Then we see the car drive to a building. We see them take an elevator to the top floor of that building. Then we see them go into Treat Williams' office. We don't need to see any of that. Why is like this... Dude, no wonder nobody saw this movie. It's boring as fuck.
Here, go get my lighter. And they pan to the guy going to get the lighter.
So now back at Treat Williams High Rise, we just talk. We punch Billy Zane in the gut a little bit. Billy Zane, they're going to take Billy Zane upstairs to kill him. He escapes. He somehow changes into his Phantom costume.
He ducks into a broom closet.
No, he hides in, he runs into that mechanics room,
okay.
They immediately follow him, and he's in, like, I'm just going to assume that was magic.
I mean, since the costume doesn't even grant him special powers and doesn't even conceal his identity, really, and everyone outside of, you know, the jungle place thinks the Phantom doesn't exist, why not just pursue the captors in his regular clothes?
Like, are you telling me he carried both of those holstered, long-barreled 45s in his business suit?
No one was checking.
Like, where were they?
Oh, my God.
And where are his clothes now? Does he just not need those anymore?
I'm going to assume the answer is that the movie forgot to tell us.
I mean, at this point, I'm just so bored.
Oh.
This movie is so boring.
And the way that the movie forgot to tell us the Phantom's powers.
Or
any personality traits he has, or... Anyone
or that
anyone
had a
finds
secret
him interesting
identity?
At all.
Or that he's another person, he has his whole backstory we're not privy to. So Treat Williams and crew take Buffy the Vampire Slayer out of the building, and they go to this island to get the last skull. The Phantom gets on a police horse because I guess if he's not on a horse, he's like he has no powers. And there's a police car horse chase. Billy Zane leads the cops to a zoo where a lion scares the cops, whatever.
Where was it that they need to go to find the skull? Do you remember the name of it?
Just some island in Polynesia.
The Devil's Vortex?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, no actual Bermuda Triangles were harmed in the making of this.
Well, I mean, it's not in the Caribbean, though. It's in Polynesia.
I know, which is the way they described it. It was like, well, that's the Bermuda.
Well, yeah, they describe it as the Bermuda Triangle, but I mean, all the things, the fact that they called it Devil's Vortex was not bothering me. So, the cabbie picks him up. In the back of his cab, he talks to his ghost dad again. is there really a ghost here? He tells the cabbie to take him to the plane, where they're going to the Devil's Vortex.
Yep.
He swims to this seaplane. It's a seaplane again, because no other planes exist in this universe. He gets onto the pontoon of the seaplane, holds onto the landing gear for the entire duration of this plane trip. For what I can only assume is, what, 18 hours?
Yeah, and again, there's no possible way.
He would freeze to death.
Yep.
Two, he might suffocate. Three, he would absolutely fall off. And let's say he didn't, right? Let's say somehow he survived. By the time he got there, he should be so fatigued and sick and weak that he shouldn't even be able to pick up one of his own guns, never mind fight 50 dudes.
Yeah, his hands would be frozen to the plane.
He would be, like, his muscles would be so worn from trying not to fall off of a goddamn airplane. So they get to this, they find this island, they land there, they go into a cave, and it's controlled by pirates. These are cartoon pirates. They have striped red shirts and eye patches, and they all go, arr! And they are brought to the Pirate King.
Oh, can I please say this part? Who is led by Shang Tsung.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. It's Shang Tsung from the Mortal Kombat movie.
Yeah. I just wanted to say that.
So the Pirate King has the gold skull. They threaten each other. The Pirate King tells them about the fourth skull, which they say there's four skulls. Then in the back of that scene, you see James Remar count to four on his hands like he's a child.
One, two, three, four.
And you're like, why did he do that? He hasn't been one of those like brainless heavies this whole movie. He's like, the boss, okay, whatever you say. He's not that. So why does he count to four? It's so dumb. They blow a guy up with a cannon. The pirates shoot a guy with a cannon. The Phantom, in the meantime, has been sneaking around, and he looks like a ballerina when he's doing this. Because he's tiptoeing around, he's bouncing on his toes, then he sticks his leg out behind him, and he flings his arms while he's sneaking in the shadows. He looks like a fancy lady. Which, there isn't anything wrong with that, but that's not what this guy has been this whole movie. So now all of a sudden he's doing, like, stealthy ballerina moves. Like, this looks... You're undercutting what this character is supposed to be, or at least what you've been telling me he is. Also, this scene where they're talking to the Pirate King goes on forever.
You think the movie's about to end.
And it does. Like, their back and forth is like 20 sentences long, and they only say the same two things over and over. Like, cut this shit out.
I have the skull. We know you have the skull. Would you like to make a deal? If I make a deal, this. But you have the skull.
So the Phantom finally decides to stop dancing in the shadows, and there's a swashbuckling pirate fight. The Pirate King gets eaten by sharks.
Which was a little brutal.
Also, all of a sudden in this scene, for no reason, literally no reason, Catherine Zeta-Jones is now a good guy and works with the Phantom.
Well, she liked him in, like, one of the earlier scenes.
So she's like, I'm just going to go back on my whole life plan of being a sexy pirate.
No.
Like, there's no transition to good here. She just is now. Because I guess you can't kill a woman. I guess that's why they did it. They didn't want to kill her.
I guess, yeah. I mean, at least there's another good guy. I don't know.
There's no at least. There didn't need to be another good guy. We got plenty of good guys. There's only four bad guys. So he puts the women in a submarine. He's like, I'm going to launch the submarine and then get in there with you. Now all three skulls are together. They briefly turn into a CGI cartoon where they spin in the air. Treat Williams goes up and grabs them and realizes that now when all three of these skulls are together, they shoot a laser beam.
Yeah, right.
That's all they do.
And they destroy anything that comes, you know, in contact with it.
Well, don't get me wrong. A laser beam is a pretty good weapon. Yeah. It blows stuff up. But this is far from controlling the world level of power.
Yeah. Like, that's what they make it out to be, of course. But that's...
Well, it's like the same thing. It's like in Masters of the Universe, where he's like, once I have this thing, I will now be an omnipotent god.
Nope.
Once I have all three of these skulls, it will unleash unworldly power. And by that I mean it shoots a laser beam, which is pretty cool, but doesn't make him anything.
Especially against the fourth skull.
Right, which we found out about 3 minutes ago in a throwaway line, and then it turns out that, what's his name? Billy Zane's skull ring is the fourth skull, and then has a purple laser. So he shoots a purple laser out of his ring, while the three skulls shoot a green laser, and then there's a laser fight. Billy Zane wins because he pushes his fist forward, and then Treat Williams blows up, and then they get away, and then basically the movie ends.
Well, there's another 20 minutes of nothing after that.
Oh, yeah, there's 20 minutes of nothing. No thing. They go back to his cave. Buffy the Vampire Slayer's like, ah, you're Billy Zane. He's like, I know I'm Billy Zane. I need you to basically be just a womb for me and give me a son so that I can, so that the Phantom can carry on. And then it just ends. Like, it goes. Oh,
that's the end of the movie.
Like, this movie was bad.
Yeah, it's one of the worst I've seen, especially from the 90s. I mean, I know the 90s had some pretty bad movies, but wow.
And we've been going through our 90s pretty meticulously. We've been hitting 90s, 90s, 90s. And I mean, I'll go into my review and, you know, rating real quick. Like, on a technical level, it's funny because technically this is a better movie. It has a pretty decent cast. It looks like a good film. There's no bad effects. There's no bad lighting, no bad angles. The acting is what it is. But visually, when you sit there, you're like, this looks like a movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But nothing, like, it's Billy Zane, like, let me say this. Billy Zane's good in it. He, like, what he says is good. Like, he's doing a good acting job compared to Christy Swanson, who's just fucking, I don't know, banging her head in a wall.
How many Phantom movies have they tried to make?
This is it.
I thought there was a 1955 one, and then there was one in 2000-something?
They didn't make a Phantom movie in 2000. What are you, crazy? To the internet.
Phantom movie.
Phantom. I'll cut all this out. But you said it, so now we got to find out. Okay, so there was a 1943 movie serial.
Yeah.
But I doubt anybody remembers that. Yeah. There's the 1996 one. The Phantom Legacy. On December 15, 2008, it was announced that so-and-so had secured the rights to the blah-blah and the Phantom Legacy, unrelated to the something. The film is set to have a budget of films written by blah, executive producer, some boyers, original, but it was to be confirmed. No, it hasn't come out yet.
All right.
They're talking about it, which I don't know why they would do this. And there's no way this is even true anymore. They said that this was first announced in 2008. It's been 8 years.
Not coming out.
No, like, this was it. There was an old-timey one in the movie theater, which I'm sure, movie serial, which I'm sure, like, the Batman movie serial has nothing to do with the comic. Like, you ever see those old serials where Batman's just in a car?
No, I've never seen it. I'll have to look at it.
Oh, it's great. There's, like, a 1955 one where they just drive like a Buick.
That's great.
Anyway, it's just...
So what did you think of the movie?
It's boring.
Did you hate it, not hate it?
Oh, yeah, okay, reviewing system. You didn't hate it. It's a good party movie, it's a good hangover movie, or you hated it. I hated it. Like, it took me 3 days to watch this. I couldn't stand it.
Okay. Why?
Why? Mm-hmm. Because there's, like, you're sitting there in a chair looking at this screen, and nothing is interesting. Like, I didn't want to watch it because, like, it was bad. I didn't want to watch it because I wanted to be doing something else. Mm. I wanted to be watching a better movie. It's not even like when we were watching Ninja Terminator last week and we're like, what is this? And this is so strange. Like, that's – how sad is that? That movie looks like dog shit. It's not even a movie. It's technically three movies edited together. And that was interesting. This was $45 million, and I couldn't have cared less about it.
Well, I also hated it. Again, I've already said I liked Dick Tracy. You know, don't hate on me too bad.
That's crazy to me.
What?
I said that's crazy to
me. Well, that's just how it is. I don't know why that they felt the need to make these kind of movies in the 90s. This one was really no exception as to how bad it was. And, yeah, I'd rather just... have not wasted my time this morning watching it, but hey, we're doing this podcast for you guys, and that's why I watched it.
I can't even think of a suggestion. I can't even think of something that's like this.
No, I can't either.
No, I mean, because every movie that's like this is also bad.
Yeah, we've named them all.
Yeah, I mean, if we can find The Shadow, we'll absolutely do The Shadow on here.
Oh, boy.
Because that's just like this. Yeah, none of these are good, though.
Yeah. No.
Yeah,
it was just a movie about nothing.
Yeah, go watch. Suggestion is go watch a movie you like. Go watch The Predator. The Predator's pretty
good.
That
is a good movie.
Yeah, watch that. Yeah, I guess this one kind of fizzled out because this movie has left me so soulless.
Soul without life.
Like, Like, seriously, like, I started watching it 2 days ago, and I got 20 minutes into it, and I was just like, oh, my God. Yeah. And I knew I had to finish it this morning, and I was even late because I stalled watching it for as long as I possibly could because what? I didn't want to watch it.
And for you, those of you who will watch it, you know, if you watch it, please leave comments on our on the Facebook to tell us what you thought of it.
Awful. Just sign us off. I want to.
Oh gosh, for Reverend Zank, this is Francis saying this movie was definitely a hot dog.